Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome to Imp's Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and to every person who has contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was. 30 minutes. Trying 30 minutes. This was a feckin' long AEW all-out card. This was a long show. I managed it with the Forbidden Door show and stuff. Like, this isn't my first dance with an AEW pay-per-view. They are long, they're about 5 hours. But because I'll be trying to talk about Dynamite as well, generally, I started watching AEW All Out around lunchtime on the Sunday. And yes, obviously, it's a Sunday, it's the middle of the day, so I'm not able to just sit there watching a thing for the full 5 hours. But quite generally, I didn't actually finish wrapping up till about 7. And I was like, oh God, proof of a long show. It literally took me all day to watch it. When I am recording this, I finished like 3 hours ago. As in, took a break, got away from looking at a screen for a little bit, had a lovely curry dinner. So it's still fresh in my mind, still very fresh in my mind. And that's me saying that as somebody who didn't watch the kickoff show for All Out, or whatever, I forgot what it's called over here. But yeah, I didn't watch the special because I already had too much to watch. No way to fit this in. I already struggled. And of course, that's me saying that as somebody who has also dropped watching WWE at all. So I didn't have to factor that one in as well. So I'm the kind of wrestling fan that literally I'm only watching AEW. Still struggled. There's a lot of content. I need to have this review out by the end of Monday, so I couldn't hang about. But anyway, so we're going to talk about September to Remember, and we're going to talk about All Out. As I've just talked about, there's so much to get through. So me just waiting here and just blabbing on about this stuff, like, you're not what you're here for. I mean, I'm not going to speak for you, but I assume you're more here for me to actually talk about the wrestling, to blabber on about me watching the wrestling. So anyway, let's jump on over to London, Canada first for September to Remember. Immediate reaction to this, we're somewhere else. Yay! We're out of Philadelphia and it's 3 hours. Oh, another long show. Me stopping covering WWE shows, yet that 3 hour length still chases me. But back into an arena setting as well, which I do like that, where we've got those smaller venues and then the week of a pay-per-view, you do a bigger arena and then you get the properly big arena for the actual pay-per-view itself. Personally, it's a dynamic I really liked. I like that it feels different. I'm not a fan of every venue feeling the same. This is what I wanted to do. AEW on a boat with the crew stuff, AEW with the South Park setup thing in Jacksonville, Florida, like all that was the kind of thing I was looking for. That's what I really wanted. But I guess that was my, at the time, kind of independent loving brain being like, oh, what if you try and brought the way that those kind of unique venues that you would see in a US independent, you try to bring those with a proper budget production and try and pick which ones would be the best. But anyway, let's jump on over to the opening segment of September to Remember, which was Hangman Adam Page and Kyle Fletcher with their AEW championship contract signing. So let's play the clip of this one. Play the clip.
It's time for the contract signing for the AEW World Championship. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, the champion of the world, Hangman Adam Page.
Yes, the AEW Championship contract signing between Hangman Adam Page and Kyle Fletcher. Still really like Hangman's mirroring his own AEW career onto young Fletcher. Works so well when Kyle basically tells him afterwards that he's not a reflection. He's better than Hangman was at his age. Commentary did a good job setting up whether the Aussie is a man of his word, making Page look smart for the assuring no lads at ringside addition to the contract. And an amazing focus pull shot between the AEW Championship taking up half the screen and Hangman's getting all passionate about it mid-promo on the other. I think it's fact as well that the AEW Championship wasn't just on that that left side, he absolutely dominated it. I just really like the framing of this and what they said about Hangman's character. Like, this felt like a shot that had been thought about, like really well put together. Fletcher used how this contract signing went down to prove he really is a man of his word. So no attack, none of that bullshit. Both men got their points out, set up the match and the story, which they were going to be telling at All Out. And they really got time to tell that story as well, which we'll get to when we talk about the show itself. Next up, opening match, Mox delivered once again. John Moxley versus Roderick Strong, with a few great little moments too, like Roddy immediately hitting and running dropkick through the ropes onto Danny Garcia, and his wife, Marina Shafir, distracting him all smitten so Mox could chop his throat. Like, hilarious that in that same spot, O'Reilly and Garcia were head-to-head, closer to kissing than the actual real-life couple. It just really made me laugh. The Death Rider numbers worked as a cohesive unit to steal another win. Mox stood ringside going, ah, with his chest all red afterwards. Fair to say, he left All Out a little bit worse. This was a victory. So take it in, Mox. And here I'm just going to run through the backstage bits. I feel like I'm getting through this a bit quicker than normal, but that's because it's a 3-hour show, and then I've got to talk about All Out. So unfortunately, this just turned into like a clip notes almost type of thing. But your backstage bits. Angry MJF ranted at Tony Khan about wanting out of the tables and thumbtacks match. We only filmed the closed door, but Maxwell and Tony were both mic'd up. I guess that's our in-world reason why we're able to hear the conversation, with Max being mic'd up, refusing to do an interview and then going behind the door. So we heard the whole conversation. But I thought this was great, and I thought Tony Khan came across really well as well. It feels like the type of thing where if you can't see Tony Khan and you can't see him, oh, but booking out, it's Tony getting all excited. Oh, if you can't see Tony Khan, when you're actually hearing him, it works. Weirdly, if he becomes this shadow figure that you mostly only see from behind the door, he's doing a big announcement, apparently, according to a thing that was announced, which sent a little murmur around the Canadian stadium. Apparently this Wednesday he's going to be doing an announcement. So, you know, what if he does that from the shadows as well? Maybe it just works. I don't know. I've got to the point where I'm expecting Tony Khan's announcements to not really be that big. We're not talking Dixie Carter levels of bullshit. It's not that low, but sometimes it's like, this could have been an email. It's not that big. Like, sure, it fills up a segment and maybe there will be people excited about it, but you know, I temper myself when it comes to Tony Khan announcements now. But that does mean can surprise you with something that is important and really is worth the time. But if you're aware of that, that means that it's not surprising because you're expecting something big. You catch yourself, you get caught. You get caught in the loop. Trying not to believe being like, oh, but what if it, sometimes it is important? Yeah, but it's, get yourself caught. There's a promo for the Tailgate Brawl, which aired ahead of All Out. The multi-woman chaos getting a full telefocus in a big old broadcasted pre-show. Skyfly outside with 8 out for an interview. Positivity ahead of their main event match. Then Champion Hangers gave them the warning of likely numerous interferences. I'll get to it when we start that final hour, but that final hour almost felt like the first hour of Collision just tacked onto the end of Dynamite. Didn't feel like it was a longer episode of Dynamite. It felt like I watched a standard episode of Dynamite, which was a very good go-home show. Probably enjoyed it. And the final hour felt very Collision. Here is a bunch of matches. They did go off air with a big brawl segment, but the match itself felt very Collision in the kind of the setup of it. It sounded like it was like a negative. I still enjoyed it. I just felt the switch. Big Bill had a to-camera running off on Eddie Kingston, promising that if the man shows up, he's going to expose him for being a fraud. And Bryan Danielson had a sit-down with Darby Allin, an excuse to show the more casual Mount Everest footage that was filmed by Darby. He would never turn his back on his family. Mox, however, and Danielson whispered something into Darby's ear. Having seen the match, was it, I'll have a bag with a bag in it? Like, what did he whisper? Having watched the match, what did he whisper? Now that we know what happened during the match, if Bryan Danielson generally said, I'm going to smuggle in a plastic bag, it just feels very weird to whisper that. And Darby's response probably should have been, you know, you can just bring those in, right? Like, you don't need a, you don't need to like sneak that in a bag. Like, just put it in your pocket, it's fine. Just like put sweets in it during the day or something. Like, it's fine, it's all right. Or leaves or whatever you with Danny Bryan's garden vegan stuff. Anyway, Toa Leona versus Bobby Lashley. Big boys bashed about before, big Bobby Lashley bashed better, and the crowd absolutely bloody loved it. Leona was given a run and the crowd reacted loud and well for Bobby's offense. The angle for MVP's amazing looking punch on Ricochet was so good as well. By angle I mean camera angle. Just his fist jumping to camera and sending Ricochet flying off to the left. Then we pan and just see him completely turn upside down. The match really lent in on how Lashley hasn't been pinned or submitted in AEW. Like, hey, it's their negative perception right now. Just use it and do something with it. Hurt Lock latched and Leona faded out. But they seem to do such a good job for Leona, and that fed into the tag match as well, where Leona also getting great matches, and to be fair, also looked great as well. FDR, Adam Copeland, and Christian Cage. Cope and Christian in Canada. This is the final go home segment just to get it properly heated for the pay per view opener. Soak was sent to try and warn them, but now Dax and Cash get to end the Canadian legends. As has kind of become the flow with FDR, Cash the more shouty with his historical retrospective, talking in the story about meeting Copeland 16 years ago and how Adam presented them the door, but they well and truly kicked it down and they've become living legends. Dax the karma baddie again, rephrasing this as a dream match for Adam and Christian. FDR are the modern day legends whose talent the Canadians need to keep themselves relevant. Just like a wee history lesson on why this match is so big. Before Christian ignited the fight without a care for the fine, like, he doesn't care about that huge, like, $500,000 fines. He's rich. Canadians cheering wealth, and the chaps started throwing fists. Also, the bit which was featured in the promo package because it got such a great reaction was him saying Cope and Christian, and Christian immediately jumping in going, Christian and Cope? And that was it. That was his inclusion. Like, he didn't say anything else until the ending bit where he started attacking. I really do like the dynamic of... I think it hit the best for me whilst I'm doing the backstage bits before going out. I was a real fan of chirpy, friendly Adam, who's really happy about where things are going, but Christian is still a grumpy, angry at people, and I really like that dynamic. So part of me is kind of sad, given what happens on the pay-per-view kind of just sends us back into serious Adam and nobody else really around him for the, like, at least near future. For me, that's the most boring Copeland. I don't want to see serious Copeland going after FDR wanting to beat their asses. I want to see this goofy Adam being goofy with Christian. That's what I want to see. I think, yeah, I've had enough of serious Adam. I think that's where I'll get to. Young Bucks versus Juice Robinson and Austin Gunn. Speaking of being rich, they're back again. Nick just splashing the cash without a worry. Matt, a little more fiscally aware, but EVP theme, plenty of pyro, and handing out a roll of cash to the crowd. Their opponents, Active Austin and Serious Juice, are somewhat straight faces against the Jacksons' antics. This is awesome chant, pretty much par for the course for the Bucks. Austin spilled to the outside, Juice all alone to take the TK driver, before the Bucks scurried away with their bag of money. Of course this match was fun, it was a Young Bucks match, but, you know, gotta move on. Out of all the Young Bucks matches, this was a good one, but it wasn't one where I'm going to spend ages talking about it on a show I've already got, like, so much to talk about. This, however, the Unified Championship Tournament final qualifier, Beast Mortos versus Máscara Dorada. First off, this was our Lucha Times with the attorney applying his raw degree. Secondly, Jesus Christ, Máscara Dorada really, really cemented himself here. I feel like as a back-to-back kind of cementing performances, just immediately to put in a match with Beast Mortos, put in a match with, of course, Okada and Takeshita. Like, Jesus Christ, if you just want to get somebody over, that's the back-to-back pairing to just ensure it. A Destroyer in Canada, but performed by a Mexican man. So which is it? Which Destroyer is it? Hell of a backbreaker for Mortos too, but the handspring counter into a Falcon Arrow type thing was the one that made me making noises at my screen on a Thursday lunchtime. The high difficulty bar for the final Destroyer not met. But hey, they were going for popping up into a rotating springboard for it. Like, that would have been incredible if they'd pulled it off. Finnewell head scissors with both lads stood up on the top rope got one hell of a reaction. Shooting star for the Dorada win, and Canada were up on their feet in applause. I'll get into how much I enjoyed Máscara Dorada this week after the pay-per-view match, because my god, I felt that match. I bloody felt that. After this final qualifier, Big Kazu out to make his statement, but Takeshita had his own plan in mind. Callis played the calming essence, but that all allowed Dorada for the jump. Fair to say that once I'd seen this, I was like, okay, we are in for one hell of a three-way at All Out. Then we got a bit of a AEW Women's Championship jabber segment, which came just before the Tekla Queen Amanata no DQ match. I thought this was a really unique way to pretty much do a promo trained segment, just completely uniquely. Tony Storm out first. She won her championship, baby, 7 months ago, and now she puts the title on the line against three deserving women. If you want this, then you ought to burn me, pile up my ashes, and take one big puff, because no one can get you as high as I can, darling. Jamie Hayter out of the darkness, stage left, to grab the mic. She's gonna hit hard. Then Chris Statlander, stage right, to tell them they don't have the ovaries to beat her. To which Tony Storm immediately had the very quotable, "Well, trim your bushes, bitches, we're going all out." Just the fact that they used that as the end of the hype promo before the match itself as well. For that to be the final part of Tony Storm's final AEW championship match, like, promo bit, I feel like it's perfectly encapsulating this kind of run. We started in one place and we ended with "trim your bushes, bitches." That's where we got to. And to be honest, I thought that did a really good job of just getting me excited for the All Out match. So I do kind of just love that goofy side of Tony Storm and just that uniqueness. I think that's my main thing. If you can do something like this, the fact that it felt so unique in the way that it was done, I don't care that it's kind of goofy because I'm watching something new. Literally, Tony Storm just walks out to the middle of the ring and they come out and do the exact same script but just talking at each other before the next one comes out. That's just such boring staging. The staging of this is interesting to watch. I think that's my main point. For me, it doesn't really matter if I found it goofy or not. The staging is interesting and keeps my attention, and it frames Tekla as this fourth unknown aspect on the outside, and that's how the match did play out as well. She was the thing they couldn't predict. Like, you can predict what Jamie Hayter's going to do. She's going to hit hard. You can predict what Statlander's going to do. You can kind of predict what Tony Storm's going to do. But what you don't know is what Tekla's going to do. And that is exactly how the match plays. So I just like that promo segment set it all up so well. But speaking of Tekla, she then faced Queen Aminata in a no DQ match. Just women weapon plunder fun. I loved this. Also thought it was smart to have this as your crossover between hours 2 and 3, especially if you have to do a formal show split because American TV is weird. There was a big chair for Excalibur who caught a kendo stick that Tekla just launched from the ring, saving AEW from a suit, so thank you, Excalibur. A ring full of chairs with the crowd chanted for tables. Like, come on, Tekla isn't a table fetching goodie, Canada. We saw that in action in the Mark Briscoe MJF match. MJF putting the tables away for heat, and the crowd treated him like the biggest villain in the world. Now, don't be chanting you want a table at a bad guy. They're not going to get you it. An oof-looking top rope draped twist of fate from an Aminata onto a trash can, but a bigger grimace from the Tekla spear onto a chair, with the small of Aminata's back hitting the side of the seat. Daniel Bryan commentary afterwards was saying, well, sometimes if you hit it like that, you can lose a little bit of feeling in your legs, which I thought was just like a perfect follow-up to it, because I immediately had that looked like it's going to bloody hurt kind of reaction to it. Then Daniel Bryan's addition on the commentary just really helped just create an image in your mind, which is just perfect commentary. He's really good. I don't know if anybody else is saying this. I say sarcastically, because 100% they are. Danielson's really good on commentary. The eventual second charge blocked straight up with a stiff headbutt, as in this moment I realised how much more I was enjoying this women's no DQ than last week's. Not that it really matters, but if I'm comparing, I love this one. Top rope spider crashed Aminata down into an awkward landing, but not half a minute later, Tekla was taking a fisherman's buster on a chair. Stomp onto the chairs pile for the win, and after the match, Tekla grabbed the mic to shout, Tony! I think that's how they speak in Austria. Storm out into the ring, and we had ourselves a wee brawling bit, with each of the all-out lasses saying hello. Judy Hart's Sky Blue saved their lass. Wheeler Yuta saving Statlander to the chagrin of Marina Shafir. Hayter with the final strike locked and loaded, then Tony screaming at the Southampton woman to actually hit her. And to be fair, that was another finish which did fit into the match itself. Like, Tony Storm versus Jamie Hayter was kind of, that was the duo somewhat held back from if you got all the other ones dancing. That's me reading through my past notes then realising, oh, they set up their match really well. Just reading all the little details, like, oh, I appreciate it more now. The all-out tag title ladder match qualifier, Killswitch and Kip Sabian versus Jet Speed. This was the start of our very collision-feeling final hour to me. Canada was very happy to cheer for Mike Bailey. The Lucha Dinosaur more happy to chokeslam him, though. Sabian angry and slapped the big dinosaur man for not tagging him in, before Mr. Saurus pushed the Englishman's feet off the ropes and then faked a hot tag instead of jumping off and leaving him. Kip, all by himself, met with a flying Kevin Knight and a spin-kicking speedball. Stupid dinosaur! The most serious of yells. You know you are in a proper, serious storyline when your line is to shout, stupid dinosaur! You know you've got, like, the serious role there. But this was all very necessary. This is the beat that you need your crowd to kind of be aware for, to let it bubble when we get to a segment on the All Out pay-per-view. Rio versus Robin Renegade. Mercedes Moné, all Canada Red on commentary. Rio as beloved as ever, even if Renegade toyed with her for being tiny in comparison. A much stronger showing from Rio this week. Robin a really good base for the smaller woman to spin around and get launched by. Dragon Suplex set up a nice crucifix bomb for Rio's win, as Moné sat on the announce desk with all the titles and a grumpy expression. Renegade grabbed the leg to let Mercedes jump her number one contender, backstabber to boot, and she gloated and danced away. And finally, our main event, the final all-out tag title ladder match qualifier, Josh Alexander and Hechicero versus Top Flight. The camera zoom right into Don Callis' face as he introduced Hechicero. Hechicero made me laugh again. Like, congrats, you got me again. Fun enough, Hechicero with that awesome jumping leg guillotine thing for the win. And then I wrote here, I'm sure he'll totally be a normal inclusion for a ladder match. Oh, past me. You were spot on. After the bell, Christopher Daniels found himself surrounded by the Don Callis lads, Scorpio Sky and Jet Speed with the save. The Young Bucks making that uneven again before Brody King and Bandido got the final champion say. A multi-chaos brawl to send us off air, but Lance Archer and Rocky Romero had to make one final statement to Christopher Daniels when champion Hangman Page strode on out to make the save, but again the numbers that allowed a certain someone to end the show with the title raised high, he was just a little slow. So into a beatdown we entered, Rocky fetching the table to repeat what Fletcher did to Kenny Omega, having Callis practically bouncing with excitement on the apron. Hangers countered Kyle on the apron, but the buckshot flip after was met with a title shot to the face, and a real surprise to me as Fletcher then actually hit the brainbuster through the ringside table. It took Kenny out, so how bad a shape will Page be in at All Out? Well, let's jump on over and find out. That's the point. That's the point of it. Oh my god, we just saw Kenny could get taken out, and now we're going going to see Hangman Page have to defend his title after taking it? How is he going to be able to do it? Well, there's only one way to find out, and that is to travel to Toronto, Canada. As already said, no pre-show special thing, didn't have the time. The show's already 5 hours. Even if it is in HDR and HBO Max, and I'm probably not surprising when I say I thought this show was incredible. I thought it was terrific. Generally had a great time with it. What does help is, even if I'd watched this live, I wouldn't have been watching this late, which has been a big thing with AEW shows in the past, because they do go for about 5 hours. If that starts at 1 a.m, in the past when I've been getting towards the main event, I have been one tired British boy. I very much wanted my bed. So if a match has like a slower beginning, I would have just been zoning out. I know for 100% I would have found the main event nowhere near as strong if I'd watched it live. But here, like, yeah, it was getting dark. It taking me all bloody day to get through this thing. Anyway, let's jump on over to Toronto, Canada, and let's use a sound clip of the opening match. Adam Copeland and Christian Cage versus FTR. 6 years in and AEW is still delivering on dream matches. So let's play the clip of the latest one.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
This match was exactly what I wanted it to be. A big old tribute for the Canadians, full of callbacks and references to past friends and foes. And for me, this was the exact venue for that kind of match. I'm not a big fan normally of huge self-referential stuff. Putting a spot of self-reference in there, there's got to be a narrative reason for it to exist. Really. Like if somebody goes online and goes, oh no, look, it is actually good because they made this reference. I was like, no, that doesn't then make it good. Because it's not narratively satisfying. Like if I didn't pick up on it, then it's not satisfying. So you have to find a way to do so. That's kind of why in TV shows you find people repeating information so much, so that when there is that satisfying moment in the plot, that it's satisfying for as many of the people as possible, rather than just, you know, people who've been paying attention properly or can speak the film language well enough. It's like, oh, no, I'm not going to get anything out of something that I don't pick up on. So yeah, I'm all down for dumbing down my wrestling. But this match, this venue, where it is a celebration of Adam Copeland and Christian Cage coming back together, going through a checklist of their specific history. I feel like, and it's also in front of the Canadian fans who are going to be hugely behind them. I think this is the specific venue you can do it in. I don't want this in an AEW Championship main event, but I do want it in my tribute to their careers match. This is the venue for it. And before we got into the match itself, Adam and Christian were backstage bumping into Canadian people that the Canadians knew. Chipper Adam friendly to the Canadians and grumpy Christian mean to the Canadians. Like, I don't know what a Bubbles is, or his bastard character who immediately dropped F-bombs and promised to have their backs. That fed into the match a little bit, maybe, kind of. We'll see. I started questioning it, being like, but he can't be coming out to Alter Bridge. Like, sure, I don't know anything about this character. I don't know anything. Also, was the point of him saying that to just make you question for a second who it's going to be when the music starts playing? Anyway, we'll get to it. I liked how Christian really struggled early on to nail any cheeky baddie attacks, because FTR also assholes, so of course Cash dodged Christian's cheeky ringside chop, as well as showing how smooth a unit FTR are in comparison to the Canadian legends. Edge knew to stop Cash from putting him off the apron, but didn't read Dax knocking him off immediately after, so Christian couldn't make the hot tag. There's little notes like that. One was a cohesive unit from the get-go. One had to remember their cohesion. Like, it is there, it's just been so long and they're different people. A little Cena tribute from Copeland, a man he faced a hell of a lot thanks to WWE's repetitive booking style at the time. We got a five-knuckle shuffle and attitude adjustment for a near fall, and the unheard-of scenario of an AEW crowd loudly chanting for Cena. WWE used to always have their commentators say, they're chanting for the these people because it's just bizarro land in Canada. But were they right? An AEW show and they're chanting for Cena. Only fair to let Dax and Cash have their tribute too, as they got locked in double sharpshooters. Gotta get that Bret Hart moment in there. Then another tribute as Cope and Christian tease a Hardy Boys twist of fate with Adam set to dive. Like, good call for FTR to stop that. Like, don't be letting the man try a swanton at his age with his neck injuries. Stokely interference was met with This Is War by Alter Bridge playing. I'm going to see them in February, so I've listened to the album and I immediately knew what song that was, and I hope that I've got it right. I say immediately, no, that's the name that came to my head. And my brain going, oh yeah, earlier on they did bring up that Bubbles would have their back. I don't know what a Bubbles is, but they said he would have their back. Nope, it's Beth Copeland making her AEW arrival and possibly exit as well. She speared the life out of Stokely. So many near falls after. Christian was powerbombed onto the Spanish announce table. Got one hell of a pop for Cope's quick out after as well. Just a note of the powerbomb, he was carried down the steps in the powerbomb position by Cash and then just oof onto the announce desk. But doing that to Christian cost FDR in the end, with ringside Christian holding onto Cash's leg so he couldn't save Dax after the man ate a spear for the finish. And it was a very Adam Copeland-y kind of finish, where like kicking out of big moves and countering at the last second and your one spear kind of gets the win. Like, it's a very of that era of WWE almost mentality bringing into the finish of a match. Specifically for this stage and for this match, I don't mind it. If this is a tribute to their careers, then it makes sense to have those patterns in the match. It's just if those patterns then continue into serious Adam again against FTR, which we'll get to, because after the match, Nick Wayne and friends came on out. Kip Sabian ran down to the ring and handcuffed Adam to the ropes after FTR's jump on the distraction. Christian ate the stuffed pile driver, which I had just seen Adam Copeland kick out of. So how bad is it really? I mean, I'm watching this entire segment being like, oh, they probably shouldn't have done that, because I've just seen him kick out, so it can't be that bad. But then Beth Copeland, after an I love you and giving Adam a kiss, to a huge reaction, she started facing down FTR. Look, an absolute badass. Before then, she also ate a stuffed pile driver, and Adam going all serious acting over his wife laid down on the mat. And that's what started to concern me. It's like, oh, they've done the angle where his wife comes out to valiantly help him, but him doing that has put her in danger, and now he blames himself, and we're going to get all that serious stuff where I put her in harm's way and I'm going to attack you for it. I was ready to enjoy a different feeling of Adam Copeland. I was ready to enjoy goofy Adam, and with the Christian dynamic as well. Sure, this can be used to fully unite Christian and Edge in the long term, but like now they've got a reason to properly get together long term and do another match for FTR. But that does mean at least the next month we're getting serious Adam. And personally, can't think of anything I find more boring. As I was saying, personally, done with serious Adam, ready for goofy Adam, ready for fun times Adam. I've had my fill of serious Adam. I got a whole Malachi Black feud. I'm absolutely fine with serious Adam. But nope, we're gonna get a whole bunch of it. Big Bill versus Eddie Kingston. Hilarious that Eddie came out still wearing his Claudio Sucks Eggs shirt. His grudges never die. Just immediately remembered why so many love that man. He just like charged out with that intensity and chops a tall tree of a man down. Big Bill hit two black hole slams, which Eddie struggled to take both times. I'm not a wrestler, I don't know why. I don't know if it was Big Bill struggling to lift him or if it was timing or what, but neither of them went right. Finally hit the back fist and Big Bill kicked out at one with amped up flexing. The finish somewhat diluted with the Shivani water of that missed to Eddie's back fist, and then counting the 1, 2, 3 after I've just heard Shivani call that it missed, and then Danielson on the replays does a really good job of saying, oh no, he's caught him on the chin, that's what actually knocked him down. Danielson, he's just the best. Immediately so good. We then got a second post-match jump, damn it D-Lo, and the lights went out for the fellow New Yorker hook. Had a laugh at the no pop for the spotlight, but of course they're all just looking at the stage, and eventually they do go, oh, it's the back fist on Brian Keith looked bloody great, sending Mr. Bad Apple down, the baddies scurrying, and a New York team all. I thought for a second we might be getting something new for Hook, like a new direction in a way. People were bringing up the idea of, well, he's in that lineup with all of the other people who might be turning and joining the Death Riders. I didn't take like too much credence with that. People, they tried to look for things with the AEW stuff. And we are getting an Orange Cassidy return as well. But I think I was just, I'm ready for the Hook character to go for somewhere rather than being somebody's understudy. And maybe that is some form of dynamic, and maybe this one doesn't quite play out as that. But the commentary put across being like, oh yeah, Eddie Kingston's someone that Hook can learn from. Like, oh, is he? He's still a student. Is he? Not forming his like your own proper path yet. Speaking of forming paths, I guess that's a transition. Tables and thumbtacks, MJF versus Mark Briscoe. Well, what silly bloody chaos this was. Smart Maxwell wore gloves. Not a smart Mark. Just went taped knuckles. Immediately noticed that, Maxwell dressing all white because of his white collar wins bit for the feud. But also, as wrestling fans, we know exactly why a wrestler comes out wearing all white for a violent match. Briscoe also in a white tank top, making the violence to come more clear as he poured every bucket of the thumbtacks all over the ring. Max on the outside, it'd just be like, I'm not a hardcore wrestler. I said I don't want to get involved in this. I'm not going to get involved in this. And that gave Briscoe just the room to empty every single bucket onto the ring mat, and the mat is absolutely covered in thumbtacks. And once in the ring, Freeman hilariously just stared at all the thumbtacks for a good few seconds. Then like, oh my god, to really sell their presence. Right before, a big old sequence teasing both lads getting put into them. But it was Briscoe who poured them, and you know wrestling rules. Poke to the eye and a slam later, he was then on the ground selling with tacks in his body. But then the way more violent spot of Max driving the man's forehead into a load of tacks that got the man bleeding. There's a smart bit after as we followed MJF putting the tables away to those booze that I mentioned him doing that earlier. But him doing that was so that we didn't see Mark taking the tacks out and instead just saw the bloody aftermath. Like, you saw them in his forehead, but then you cut away to Max, and when you come back, they've already gone and his head is bleeding. Alabama slam onto the tacks got a huge reaction. Just tacks just stuck all over Briscoe's head and even the back of his head. They were really teasing Max's eventual comeuppance as he dragged Mark across his back over the tacks, fed them into his gob, which led to blood all over MJF's crotch thanks to the Briscoe head blood. The crazy bugger even took two back body drops, really sending it in between, just so Max's bump on the third tasted all the sweeter. They really soaked up every single one of these tack bumps. Max was desperate to not fall onto the tacks and falling back whenever he could, but ended up taking the hardest slam of them all via Briscoe's Lashley-esque like powerbomb spinebuster thing. With thumbtacks in the back of his bald head and tacks flying everywhere along with him, it was time to get that, yay, a table pop for the goodie. We went full Sabu popping up off a chair over the ropes and toe-paying onto Max through a table, then an elbow drop off the apron through a second table, so you gotta do a third, right? Max grew desperate, spraying the face of Mark with a handful of tacks, continuing to up the ante with Briscoe then fetching a chair with thumbtacks stuck to it. MJF set up table number 3 in the ring. The match is called Tables and Thumbtacks. Makes sense to get that big spot with the two combined. That's the whole gimmick. Two bags emptied onto the table. After a bit of teasing, including a jumping pile driver from MJF and a top rope day driller from Briscoe, we then got a froggy bow with the tacks flying everywhere. I bet that looked amazing live. A second froggy bow onto the tacks and a J driller for the win. A nice note with Briscoe winning with his brother's move. Fair to say there's a bit of time needed to clean up after this one. This is where you got your DraftKings ad and Bowens and Castro in the parking lot arguing. But what silly bloody fun that was. And also generally a little bit surprising, given almost in the whoever sets up the table takes the table rules, Mark Briscoe was almost destined to lose this. Be like, in every single scenario, he would be the one setting up the downfall of stuff. But I felt like this match was just put together so well. Really made every single bump into those thumbtacks, like, they got their money's worth out of every single one of those bumps. And I really did like when they did the froggy bow through the table with the thumbtacks on it, and they just go upwards. Just fly away. Hey, you don't have to go too complex. You just put a load of stuff on the table and watch them fly upwards, and it's cool. And it's fun. On to the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and MVP in a six-man tag against the now called The Demand, Ricochet, and the Gates of Agony. This was exactly what you were expecting. For me, perfectly placed on this show as they needed rest between the chaos of the previous match and the TBS Championship to come. Ricochet got a few big laughs before getting tossed and launched about by big Bobby Lee Lashes, bulking up and delivering quick punches to no effect. Danielson and commentary brought up MVP's knee injuries right before the Gates of Agony started working on them. Benjamin went suplex mad. For me, he could just absolutely continue to be the best part of the Hurt Syndicate. Even a sneaky tag didn't help as Shelton just suplexed two lads at once. Luna and Lashes were two big boy brawlers, spinning to ringside for a sneaky chair counter, then a cool as fuck chair step up from Benjamin. All to the usual Syndicate flow with a Ricochet dive out over the ring post, and Leona took out both Bobby and Shelton with the barricade charge. Ricochet and Bishop had MVP to themselves, Spirit Gun for the win, and booze because Ricochet won. And then booze for me because it was my immediate reaction when I heard MVP say, "We want a six man." I was like, okay, so that's how the Hurt Syndicate get their next loss. Lashley and Benjamin taking nothing, and MVP is there because the Hurt Syndicate need to take a loss and they're not going to take a bin. And if anything, that's my negative because because I thought it the second they announced the match. And unfortunately, that was exactly why he was there. But for Ricochet and the GOA, that is actually huge. That is huge. Not sure how I feel about the demand, but the fact that their entrance theme now starts with Ricochet doing his ha-ha! And then they go into it. I really love that act. The TBS Championship, Mercedes Moné versus Rio. Unfortunately, the crowd hadn't quite recovered as much as I was hoping they would have for this one. Mercedes entered with shirtless men standing posing down the ramp wearing all of her championships. There's something about wrestling that has shirtless men wearing trousers feel more bare than the oiled up wrestlers I've been watching all show, who have been practically dancing in their underpants. But suddenly you have men posing like models. Suddenly they feel so much more bare and naked. Wrestling's just weird. Wrestling gets you reacting to things like that. For the match itself, it's always a guaranteed pop when Mercedes' opponents do her dance. Dennison laughed, "That's so kind of you," when Rio asked if she could climb on the announce desk before then diving with a second front stop to the stomach of her opponent. Like, she does something really kind, and then something really murderous. And that's the dynamic of Rio. I really love. Rio got a whole string of offense at the start, it taking cheeky ring apron villainy and an announce desk diving Meteora to stop her. Good job reminding us just how dangerous Rio is in spite of her size. Rio went to wear down Mercedes' knee for the single leg boss and crab, but I wasn't expecting her to fully lean back and lock it in right away. Three amigos after a superplex in the rare circumstance of actually just hitting all three outright without much fanfare. The ending flows brought it all back. Counter stomach stomps, single leg Boston roll through counters. Rio ran with the flow until Mercedes grabbed at the ref to distract so she could rake the eyes. Monet Maker for the win. Danielson echoing what I've been saying during the build for this. For the first time ever, I think we saw Mercedes almost run out of gas. To just add to her defences being more through survival than soundly beating her opponents as her TBS reign goes on forever. And bringing up Ultimo Dragon again, just making that point that that's the record she's going to beat. That's the record she's going for. But making that road just seem just a bit more rocky as she just survives through these matches is a long-term lesson, really good as she gets closer and closer to that thing that it means more and more. Then my personal match of the night. I felt this match. And specifically, it was Okada's entrance where I just felt it. Sometimes when it's building into a match, it could be a promo package that it locks you in or something. Here, it was Okada's entrance. I'm watching Okada's entrance and the camera panning around him in the black and gold light as the crowd chanted his name over his OK Rock was really fucking cool. And it got me and I was just locked in. And then the match is spectacular. It's like, yes. Yes, match of the night. The Rich Latta Pro Wrestling. this is the one of the night. Immediately from Dorada stepping up off of one lad's thigh to run on the other, I just knew I was in for a treat. I mean, really, I knew it as soon as I watched Wednesday's Dorada versus Beast Motos match, but still, my expectation was set pretty damn quick. Hard hitting Takeshita, Okada's precision perfection, and Dorada's injection of a lucha pace fit all together so damn well. Takeshita's brainbuster on the ramp to Mascara looked so fucking brutal. Like, somehow kept the head locked in place as he dropped and the body just twisted. Like, I don't know how they did that safely. Like, Michael Oku-esque in his, "Oh, that man's dead," as every head-based move on the man was guaranteed a reaction. Two Dorada tornillos span over the top to the outside to both men. If anything, the cardio impressed me more than anything. Like, what do you mean you're gonna run and bounce off the ropes two times for each one just without taking a breath and just do it? Like, I'd be done. That'd be me done. Big Kazu and Konosuke finally faced off and got such a buzzing reaction. Just for a flash before Dorada was back in, but immediately after the Canadians were chanting, "This is awesome." The three-man flow kicked in, so no single pairing had too long to dance without interruption. Like, Okada and Takeshita taking too long up on the corner. So in pops Dorada to jump with a double Rana to incredibly flip them both down. Finally got an actual flow between Okada and Takeshita to see just how good a singles match between them will eventually be. With them both down, Dorada immediately moonsaulted in. I'm really not doing this match justice, but at this point I had such a smile on my face. And it wasn't just because of the chilled Madry I was drinking. I was watching it. Yes, it definitely helped. However, this match was amazing. One hell of a stalled last ride powerbomb from Takeshita to Mascara. And that third man to constantly pop back in just injected such an amazing pace to this match. The fight forever fully earned from the Toronto crowd. Never mind Kazu or Takeshita, Mascara Dorada had the crowd up on their feet buzzing as he climbed on high. And an amazing finish flowing so fast. The fans on their feet applauding for a reason. Raging fire onto Dorada. Such a great flow between Konosuke and Okada, but a dropkick sent the former down and Kazu immediately picked up Mascara for a Rainmaker and the win. Incredible match. Really enjoyed it. Did everything to get me excited for Okada Takeshita. My match of the night. All the stars. All the stars. Then, as Excalibur put it, onto something completely different. The coffin match, John Moxley versus Darby Allin. Darby immediately jumped during Mox's crowd walk entrance. No time wasted jumping into our walk and ball and obligatory Darby Allin dive with a painful landing. Because, of course, it's Darby. Of course I was. The crazy fella even went full Samoa Joe and took the stairs bump off of a running dropkick, and that's just the thing he did. Like, to no kind of huge, like, oh my god, we put a huge spotlight on this moment in this beat in the match. Like, no, just like in the middle of the walking board, he just does it. Like, Darby, my man, you've got a bump card. My guy. Darby bit the ear and they did their best to hide Mox making his ear bleed, but totally grand for the live crowd pop, who obviously didn't see any of that. Mox stood up his coffin for Darby. Like, oh yeah, both had a unique coffin to put the other man in, but we got two damn great looking dive spots off of it first. Darby went out the ring crashing both he and Mox into the upright coffin. Then Mox caught a diving Darby with a cutter on the other side of the ring before X-plexing the Wee Man onto the Darby coffin. The whole Death Rider crew out to help with the destruction. Shafir undid the bottom rope so they could slide their team's coffin into the ring. And they were literally only there to help. Like, once they did that, like, they just all left. Like, it's just nice to see a team working together to achieve a task. And then off they go. Mox with this handled as he pummeled Darby atop the coffin in the ring. Darby fought back with a screwdriver hidden in the top turnbuckle and stabbed the lad over and over for return to Headblood fun times. Coffee drop onto the coffin was our breather of fun in this match. Like, before we were back to a fork in the ear and watching Darby bite poor John's bloody ear. Death Rider on the coffin, and it's okay, you can have another moment to breathe again. It's like, you're not going to see anybody stab anything into someone's ear. You're not going to see any of that. A lead pipe introduced earlier saved Allen's loss, sticking it out to stop the lid from shutting. Darby's turn had Danielson sneakily hand a plastic bag to use, like, give him what he deserves, as the crowd chanted for kayfabe murder. Bag over the head for Danielson S. Stomps, kicking his head in. This is murder in a downbeat, when Haircut Pack returned to Rage's Edge Darby over the top rope onto the coffin. I mean, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, that. Also, do you add Pac to the list of people who can't wear normal clothes because he's just a big wrestler boy? You're a big wrestler boy. He just walks around as a big wrestler boy. You put him in a t-shirt. Like, he can't hide the fact he's a big wrestler boy. Put him in the t-shirt and the muscles just have him just standing not right. It's like, well, big wrestler boy. Big wrestler boy, not right t-shirt. Pac packed Darby inside a body bag and dropped him into the coffin in ring. Mox simply kicked the lid to shut for the win. A truly unique match, it's fair to say. And also pretty much what I expected. It was great to see the return of Pac as well. When I have questioned when I've been watching the Death Rider stuff, and like, oh, they got the introduction of Daniel Garcia, but I wonder what's going to happen if Pac was to ever return, because I didn't really know what was up with him. Yeah, so good to see Pac return, but also, yeah, this was just as violent as we were expecting. Then I guess something that feels entirely different to everything else in this card as well. The AEW Women's Championship, Tony Storm versus Jamie Hayter versus Chris Statlander versus Tekla. I felt the show was on such a high entering this match, and then watching the promo segment, I really enjoyed the video they did for this. I talked about it a little bit earlier, and it's four amazing wrestlers. It did feel like they were just in front of a tired Canadian crowd, or at least a not well-mic'd Canadian crowd that still had their fair bit of wrestling to go, and with a finish somewhat designed to come out of left field and shock. That even if I do like the idea of Tony's call for someone to come and kill her off actually coming to fruition, I think I just liked this more in theory than I did actually watching it on the day, which normally does long-term bode well. Like, if I creatively do agree with it, even if the match itself didn't 100% click with me, that normally means long term I'm going to be okay with it. But the whole dynamic was happening with Chris Statlander and the Death Riders, and I am interested by that. They have successfully got me intrigued with how that's going to play out. So even though I'm not going to be singing about this in this write-up, I did creatively click with pretty much all of it. It feels odd to be talking like this. Like, my logic brain has kicked into, and my emotional brain have had two completely different reactions. Hey, it happens sometimes. Wheeler Yuta immediately up on the apron with words for Stat, just like every tag match she was in during the build for this match. In a wee no DQ in four-way matches reminder, Tekla weaponized her belt, whipping poor Tony. Tekla was integral to most of the early flows as that unpredictable competitor. But as we were saying earlier, you kind of know what you're going to get from the others, so you know what to prepare for. But with Tekla, what is she going to bring? And she was just so unpredictable in this match. So Storm hilariously stomped on her like a bug as the Austrian Lass was doing her spider walk. Storm and Hayter was the pairing held off from for the later exchanges, which is pretty easy when you can just rely on Tekla to be involved in everything, and Statlander to snap in for a surprise sudden swing. Tekla's spear off the apron to Hayter looked amazing, but I wasn't expecting it to strike the finish. Tony shot to Statlander, locked her in with the seatbelt pin, using Wheeler Yuta's move and completely surprising everybody with the win. Tony Storm shot face and semi-applause as she backed up the ramp in full shock that it had actually happened, but also in applause that somebody had stepped up when she was demanding someone to do so. Holly Cameron on out to celebrate with her friend, and no, we didn't get a big Death Rider angle turn. Isn't that kind of story that they're telling? Chris Statlander, now she won the title by using what the Death Rider boy said, isn't just going to beat up Harley Cameron and immediately turn Death Rider. They had their return person. They got Pack. You don't immediately need Stat as well. Like, it's fine. Don't be too greedy, Pepper Marx. Don't be too greedy. But yeah, as I said, I wasn't as enamored with this match as I was watching it as I thought I was going to be. Like, I was in on this show. I was in on this story with these four people. Then I watched the match itself and I found it to be fine. Like, I wasn't actually as drawn into the action as I thought it was going to be. And it never kicked up into that next gear. But also on this show, we have just seen that Unified Championship three-way. Like, that was something exceptional and possibly unfair. Another multi-person to try and keep up with. Or at least you're going to be on the same show, so the bar has been set so damn high. But creatively, I agree with absolutely everything that happened in this match. All the little stories they did. The holding off of Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter. The way that Statlander wins. And Tony Storm's reaction afterwards, what that means for her character. I agree with everything. So I don't think I'm going to be too harsh on it going forward. I feel like I am going to... If I click on it that much, with that logic side of my brain, I'm going to be fine. And next was the match where you just turn your brain off and watch some people jump about. The AEW Tag Team Championship four-way ladder match. Brody Doe versus Young Bucks versus Jet Speed versus Josh Alexander and Hechicero. Our party match of sorts before the main event. Expectedly, with everyone involved, there were some cool spots, like Mac holding onto Nick so he didn't get Germaned, but the force of a Brody King gave us a big old chain of suplex men. Everybody got to dive, then everybody took turns seeing who could come up with the most impressive bump onto a corner prop ladder. Yes, for me was Bandido, as he held up Hechicero and hit him with a press slam into the ladder. Just press slamming the much larger Magic Man. Brody King eventually got his big dive, going to fly onto all men, but got met with a ladder to the face and comedically just did a slow fall to the outside instead. The aftermath of which gave us the time for some ringside reorganising, with tables set, steps turned on their sides, and the biggest ladder discovered. There's always one. Nick Jackson flipped with the Swanton onto Brody, onto that ladder, for a pencil rotation, no break. Then a hilarious spot as the Bucks and Don Callis men worked together to also go after Jet Speed, and the Bucks just stopped and rushed to climb up the ladder in the ring. Bandido then later alone in the ring. Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight both jumped to springboard, and the camera cut wide for an awesome shot of Speedball backflipping to the outside and Knight flying with a forearm at Bandido, who was halfway up the ladder. Another great spot with Bailey holding Matt Jackson on his shoulders for a Knight dropkick, only for Nick to catch Kevin Knight on his own shoulders when he went for it, and then the two started punching each other, which was almost perfect shoulder strength expectation conditioning, as Brody King simply carried Bandido on his shoulders over to the ladder to stop the climbing lads. The two Canadians, Mike Bailey and Josh Alexander, chopped at each other to atop the ladder. With the ladder behind Bailey, Hechicero struck to submission the guy, and bad times for both. Bailey went for the moonsault with his knees onto the guy, but he went further back than expected, so landed more on Hechicero's head slash hands, so no real cushion for those bare feet either. Hechicero's fingers got trapped in the ladder. It means it took knees to the face. Not a fun time. That ladder wasn't done yet though, because you can't have a ladder match without a man hitting a sunset flip powerbomb. The tables finally got their moment, splashes in sequence diving off from every corner. Then the fourth beat had Brody King carrying poor Mike Bailey on his shoulder to pile drive poor Mr. Ball through the biggest ladder. Kevin Knight, the last lad standing amongst the baddies, with the Bucks and Don Callis men fighting in rotation, only for all four men to lift the ladder together and crash Kevin Knight out through two tables by the ramp. That's both of Jet Speed dead. BTE trigger to Hechicero. The champions took advantage for the crazy moonsault off the corner, holding a ladder onto a pile of lads on the outside. Buddy then climbed up to the champions to retain in what I'll call a classic AEW show momentum reset party. But there was a time you saw Darby Allin and Sting coming out in a multi-man match. You knew you were in for just a bit of fun, and it would suddenly just wake you up. It'd almost be in this spot as well with the show, where you feel like the card is too long. There's just way too many matches, and then you see this multi-man match with everyone coming out. You're like, oh god, I just want the main event. I'm so tired. Then you have the best time of your life, and you're hyped for the main event. This is pretty much what this match was doing. And after the match, Jack Perry slid into the ring to seek retribution on the Bucks, which has been teased on at least BTE. I don't know if it's definitely been teased on TV. Rocky Romero stopped him. Bucks capitalized, and the Canadians chanted for the Lucha Dinosaur they'd watched Dynamite. Lights out, cut to a VTR play, which seemed very similar to the one from London. A video of a man digging up a coffin, and a really good aerial shot of him dragging it down the road attached to a car so you could see the sparks flying at night. And revealing it was Jack Perry who had brought the Dino Man back. showing that same place where the dinosaur was brought back to life with the energy, showing it was Jack Perry who was injecting him with that life. Luchasaurus threw the killswitch belt into the crowd, big old hug for a pop, and then one of the loudest reactions of the night when Tarzan Boy started playing for the first time in years. Everybody with their arms up doing the wow. But before the main event, and what I really liked is apparently this was the time matchup with WrestlePalooza starting for WWE's counter show. So the fact when we've got apparently, I'm trying to remember because I listened to a review because I've not watched it, there was, I think they were saying Triple H was in the ring and he's doing all of that jabber stuff. And the exact same time, we're watching Jon Moxley get set on fire. Like, if you're going to compete with something starting, why not do something that you cannot tune away from? Because what am I watching? Marina Shafir took a cameraman hostage. Jon Moxley was wanting a moment alone to teach Darby a lesson. So all of the Death Riders drove off to give him privacy. He was trying to shout the cameraman away as well. When Darby Allin just jumped out of the coffin and attacked Mox, he was going to go for something else, but then spotted the lighter fluid on a nearby table, and Darby poured it onto the body bag and set it alight, with lads immediately jumping in with a fire extinguisher, and one dragged Darby away whilst the guy was shouting, "Burn! Burn to the ground!" Like, okay, yep. Certainly a unique way to compete. And I am obviously fearful for what's the next stipulation if you keep upping the ante. What are they upping it to? we just watched that coffin match, and now you've done a little thing setting him on fire. What are you going to do? And finally, the main event, the AEW Championship, Hangman Page versus Carl Fletcher. Pay-per-view main event Carl Fletcher with his ultimate prove yourself moment. A long show with a long main event, given all the time to play out its story, and no, didn't rush anything into its finish. Again, teased driving hangers through the ringside table in a reminder of the spot from Wednesday, gave us our weak spot to show how our hero got worn down by it as the match progressed. Fletcher did everything to work that neck, draped DDT in the ring before successfully hitting the sheer drop brainbuster on the timekeeper's table. A nice note of him holding the AEW championship that was on that table a moment earlier, as if it was already his, but also a reminder of why he's doing all this. "This is my night. I am ready," to Hanger's face when back in the ring. "You're not ready," from the crowd after the champion kicked out. Such a perfect reflection of the story they're trying to tell. Just, and it's the fact, because I don't think they lingered on the AEW championship thing, it's just the fact that he just was holding it. It was just so perfect to have the crowd starting chanting that right after that. That, yes, that is literally the story we're trying to tell. That is the perception of him. He's really trying to prove it. And what he's doing, he thinks the title is always his, but he genuinely isn't ready. The table ringside showed up again. This time, Hangers countered and dropped Fletcher with a dead eye through it. The Aussie all groggy for the buckshot, a perfect setup for the Kenny Omega crumble spot. Speaking of, the next spot was Hangman immediately aiming the gun and pulling out a V-trigger. Big pop for the one-winged angel setup. But instead, we got our first properly quick flurry of the counters. Fletcher, with his own influences, whipped out a hidden blade and showed no hesitation in trying to hit the Tiger Driver 98, flipped out of Hangers was fine. Hangers kept aiming damage at Fletcher's neck, but every bookshot attempt got countered into such an awesome quick counterflow. Like, you almost got to a point where, instead of me thinking, oh, how are they going to dodge the bookshot, I would get excited because, a bookshot, that means it's going to get dodged. I'm going to get an awesome sequence again. Brian Danielson fully freaked out after Hangers kicked out of the sheer drop Banebuster, transitioning the crowd's fight forever into a loud yes chant as he was stood up, just enthusiastically talking about the match. Fletcher lost his cool a little, going to ambitiously finish things off with a brainbuster onto the exposed turnbuckle. Instead, an avalanche deadeye had Kyle landing high inside out. Finally, the buckshot lariat hit, another bumper that turned Fletcher inside out, and Hangman Page retained. Both men down for a while after, allowing Page to give kind words and show his respect. I thought at least the final, 10-15 minutes of this were incredible. And some of those bumps that Fletcher took, Jesus Christ. The deadeye through the table at ringside as well was also, really high on his back. Looked really painful. Then again, the deadeye off the turnbuckles also just looked like Jesus Christ. That looks like he could have genuinely done something. So I fully believe that when he takes that buckshot lariat and again does an inside out bump, landing high in that way again. Fully believable that that's him done for. But I thought they told the story really well as well. Carl Fletcher so full of belief that he is ready, and Hangman Page speaking from experience being like, I thought that too, but I wasn't. And obviously there were different characters. Hangman Page was trying to be the plucky good guy. Carl Fletcher's the cocky young star with all the talent. But I like that this story was somewhat Hangman Page being correct. He is that hero to be respected. That's the kind of champion that he's building towards. A really good role model is kind of the very simpled down ethos of the character, or at least with the writing style for him. And this match did everything for that. Hangman had his words. He's like, no, trust me, I am genuinely trying to help you here. And how the match went down almost was that. Thought it was a really, really strong main event. And actually, I'm kind of happy they didn't whittle this down to 20 minutes or something. The fact that they did let it play out, especially when you know those last 15 are so strong. Yeah, unsurprisingly, another AEW big show, fully delivering. Really had a good time. I said before that whilst I've been doing this, since I've started covering AEW, it really does feel like I've joined at a really high point. And the product is just on such a good run now. It's been on such a good run for quite a long time. It wasn't until All In that perception like fully permanently felt like it shifted. Currently, the perception is that AEW is just on such a good run, and that is continuing to happen whilst WWE is just not putting on that good a product. And as time goes on, I'll be less and less able to make a comparison. But obviously, the opposition is still kind of, the way they do things is still fresh in my mind as I'm watching AEW and actually writing about it now rather than just watching it for enjoyment. Anyway, great time. Really enjoyed it. Highly recommend if you've not watched it. Match of the Night is, for me, the Unified Championship. Had such a fun time with that. Arguably, if you're more into the story stuff, then it's the main event. And if you're a longer-term fan, obviously the opening match, because that was just full of callbacks to past eras and things. Anyway, really, really enjoyable all-out show. So another round of applause then. Nailed it. So I don't think it was as high after Forbidden Door. I felt like Forbidden Door was a good show, if not the one that meets AEW's really high expectations. I thought All Out was another meeting AEW's really high expectations kind of show. Just full of matches, absolutely knocking it out of the park. See, I can't really talk more positively than that. I also did forget that All In is like the ending of stories, and then they have All Out be the one where you get loads of returns, you get loads of like new guys showing up. When I was into this show, I completely forgot that that's what they use All Out for quite regularly, and I like that they've been able to keep All Out like that, especially when all the stories are so strong. I'm not needing that, so when it happens, it's like, oh crap, yeah, this is also something else AEW does. That whole criticism of what happens when the pop stops, I completely forgot that that was something that came up after the All Out moment from 2021 when Bryan Danielson turned up, Adam Cole turned up, and it was like, oh my god, it's like one of the best endings, one of the best pay-per-views ever put on. And I completely forgot that AEW got that moniker, because yeah, on these big pay-per-view shows, they will have these big sudden return moments or big debuts, but the stories are so currently strong that I wasn't even thinking like that. I completely forgot that AEW do that. Anyway, this has been a particularly long recording, and I'm really not looking forward to finding a way to edit this down, so I guess I don't know what it sounds like as I'm talking now, but I guess apologies if it's not as smooth as normal, because there was so much to cover. This is like way too long an edit to surely get it fully done in one day. I'm not setting that up as a challenge. I'm hoping that as people are listening to this, you've not listened to a fully properly edited show. You have a life, Matthew. Don't do it. I know what you're like. You're going to want the entire thing to be fully edited. But I'm doing this huge rant so you can't cut any of it out. It's going to flow into the ending. It's going to flow into the ending. Absolutely flow. You can't cut any of this. Anyway, thank you for listening, liking, and engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I will be back this time next week to talk about a standard week for AEW with their television shows in the aftermath of All Out, with all the lads returning, probably with a little bit of a Jungle Express woe. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Anyway, I'll be back this time next week. So with that, bid you adieu. Ta-va.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Amid, founder of Mochi Health. To find your mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.